Hello, everyone. This is Jack Kesslin, moderator of the podcast series 3D Tech Talks, the podcast series devoted to bringing you, our listener, up to date on all things 3D printing related, or, if you are a technical purist, additive manufacturing. For those of you who have been following the past few weeks, and by the way, thank you for your emails and your comments, you know that I will be in Anaheim, California, next week for the Pacific Design and Manufacturing Show from Tuesday, February 5th through the 7th. During that time, I'll be moderating 2 days of 3D printing sessions, and I've been interviewing the speakers, giving them a chance to talk not just about their topic, but also about their companies and their backgrounds. One of the speakers I'll be introducing is Melanie Lang. Melanie is a little tricky because in the UBM document, it says she's the managing director of a metal additive service bureau called Formaloy, but on LinkedIn, it says she's the co-founder. So Melanie's throwing us a little bit of a curveball here, but we'll go with co-founder. Melanie has a lot of perspective on metal 3D printing. She was with Lockheed Martin for, I believe, over 14 years. Prior to that, she was with Boeing for close to 4 years, and she is someone who is very much at the heart of metal additive manufacturing for aerospace. So, Melanie, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Absolutely.
Did I get all that correct about your background? did I describe that the right way?
For the most part, yeah. I have a long history in the aerospace and defense industry, and am an aerospace engineer by training, and am co-founder and managing director of Formaloy. We're okay. Actually an OEM, so we design and manufacture the machines, and we also do R&D projects and low-rate production for feasibility studies for customers that then want to bring our system in-house.
So, Melanie, that's a great segue. Now, I think a lot of people are aware in metal additive, you have DMLS, direct metal laser sintering. You have SLS, selective laser sintering. Formaloy's technology is the laser metal deposition. I'd like to give you just a couple minutes. Can you walk us through the distinctions between your metal additive technology and some of the other ones that I just mentioned?
Sure. So as you mentioned, laser metal deposition, also known as directed energy deposition with a laser.
Mm-hmm.
With this technology, we blow metallic powder through a coaxial nozzle and then form a powder cone that's heated with a laser to create a melt pool and deposit that new material. So the parts are built up layer by layer onto a substrate or an existing part. So it's a blown powder system versus a powder bed type of system.
Right. And for those of us who maybe have never been hands-on with metal additive, I've never been hands-on with it. I've used other types of 3D technologies. So what I know on metal is really what I get from YouTube videos and going to trade shows. When you and I spoke before, you mentioned there are some really specific advantages to the LMD process, which I think you said is getting closer to a net shape, something down that path?
Yeah, so LMD provides the ability to create near net shape parts and to do things that aren't possible with other processes or are very difficult. One of those is using multiple materials or gradient materials, where in a single build, you might want to start with one material and slowly or quickly transition to another material or even multiple materials in that single build.
And that's because you're not using a powder bed system. You're, as you said, it's a powder blown system. So you're putting in the powder really as it's needed in the print process, if I'm following you correctly.
That's correct. And you can have multiple feeder hoppers that contain the different powders that you'll need throughout the build, and the system automatically transitions between the powders as part of the build plan for the part.
What are some of the metal powders you can use today with the LMD technology, or DED if somebody prefers?
Yeah, we work with a very wide range of materials. We work with everything from iron-based, nickel-based, and cobalt-based alloys to titanium. We can work with carbides and metal matrix composites. And we've also been able to deposit with unique materials like copper and its alloys, as well as magnetic materials and silicon.
That's pretty cool. And I'll just add a little bit of a personal story here. You have far more perspective on the industry than I do, but I started in the 3D printing industry roughly 5.5 years ago, and I remember at the time frustration with customers was the lack of material diversity, and that was that little bit of frustration was not unique to any particular 3D technology. Near as I could tell, it was across the industry. So here it is 5.5 years later, and the material diversity has not only expanded, I think exponentially. I read it in The Economist, I think it was last year, at the U.S. Patent Office, the fastest growing segment are patents for material properties, material sciences. Do you kind of see the horizon on the material side to be, you know, sky's the limit? I mean, you just mentioned some really great materials to work with, but now it seems to be expanding and expanding. What do you see coming down the pike that way?
Yeah, I absolutely see the materials area as a growth area. Many of the materials which are used today for additive manufacturing were not designed for additive. They've been around for decades. So now the material science and the material development is really looking at how can they optimize a material, create new alloys that will be better suited for additive manufacturing and provide the same, if not better, material properties than they would get from the materials that are traditionally used and have been used for a long time.
Very cool. So let's turn this around now to your talk, which is going to be metal additive manufacturing for aerospace applications. That's the specific title. Let's just say you're someone like me who does not have an engineering background, but you read the headlines. And there was the headline that all of us saw a few years ago. I'm sure you saw it too. GE was touting its fuel nozzle that went from 20 parts to one because they 3D printed it. And then I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's this coming June, they're putting their turboprop into production where they, within the whole turboprop engine, they identified 855 parts to be consolidated into 12. So these are, to me, these are pretty big headlines about lower weight, optimized design, fuel efficiency, less maintenance. Based on your talk, Where do you see this going? What would you emphasize to people who are curious about how they apply metal additive to aerospace?
Yeah, I think it's about the ability to manufacture parts with complex geometries, such as internal cooling channels that you'd find in a rocket nozzle component in a heat exchanger, for example, or other complex designs that are being created now that additive is a possibility. And then certainly, like you talk about, where you take multiple builds and are able to combine it into a single build, where you don't have to worry about, you know, the transitions of one material to another and how you're going to get those to stay together, we build that in, basically, to additive. So those are some of the topics that my talk will cover, as well as just some more general high-level information on how laser metal deposition or directed energy deposition works. And then I'll have some sample parts with me as well so people can see what it looks like when you deposit with pure copper or other copper alloys, as well as titanium, and then some of the complex geometries that we've done that are similar to what you would find in a real rocket nozzle component.
I attended a talk a while back where there was a lot of emphasis on the how much learning there has yet to happen, how much learning more has to be done to design for leveraging additive technologies. And you used the term, I think, a few times to optimize a design, make it more efficient. But there are challenges with that, right, with a powder-based system where you don't want to leave any powder in some little channel that you can't get to. I mean, there are really important considerations in the design side to leverage a technology like Formalize. That would be pretty accurate, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And we see, you know, software playing a really big role with additive, not only from the design optimization side, but also generating the complex tool paths that you need to be able to, you know, generate these complex components.
The one of the things that I got talking to a fellow, this was about a year and a half ago, he also worked for an OEM in the aerospace industry, and they were evaluating different metal additive technologies, and quite frankly, I haven't talked to them in a while. I don't know if they adopted it or not. One of their challenges was the repeatability of the print. They understood that from part to part in 3D printing, there's going to be some variation. It's not like a CNC machine which can be precise or something. But in their particular case, they found the, and I don't even know what their application was. I just know it was aerospace. But they found the variation to be too much for their needs. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because you hear it in other industries, the ability to make the same part hundreds, a thousand times, absolutely identical.
Right, and that is a challenge for additive. And one of the technologies that we've developed and integrated onto our systems is called dynamic layer selection. And what that does is it scans each layer as it's being built and creates a topographical map of that layer so you can see if there's any variation in that layer. We've also closed the loop on that where we can adjust the toolpath on the fly to account for any deltas that are happening in that layer. Now, the other way that you could use it specifically for an aerospace application is to basically flag or stop the build should a tolerance of a specific layer be exceeded. And that's one of the things that we've done to ensure that part-to-part replication, particularly for aerospace, as they move from more of a prototyping role into production when you have to guarantee the quality of the part.
You just said something. Well, you said a number of things that were really interesting. But if we could circle back to what I heard you say there, that you can adjust on the fly. So I'm assuming then you've got to have some laser measurement going on, and you can see that there's a variation developing that's not acceptable. Is that how that works? Can you explain that in a little more detail? That sounds really interesting.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we use very similar technologies to what you would find aerospace manufacturers using to test the geometric accuracy of the parts. We're just doing that on a very small scale, layer by layer, where we're looking in the, you know, hundreds of microns overall layer size and being able to measure very small variations in that. We're doing that with a pyrometer, which is a laser scan that creates that point cloud, which then can be translated into all of the data that you need to check the dimensional accuracy.
Okay. So we've gone through your printer. We've made this part. We've made it as precise as possible. Now, there has to be some sort of quality assurance process. In talking to companies like a Formalloy, whether it's your technology or one of the other metal technologies, I'm not going to use the word problem, but I guess a concern that comes up is from different powder providers, there still isn't a standard industry criteria for material properties. Like it has to meet, I'm not saying this well, but here's what one fellow said to me, although he was not a metals provider. He was not a metals additive guy, but it was 6 or 7 months ago at a trade show. He said, you can get a titanium powder from one provider. You can get a titanium powder from another provider, which is supposed to have the same specs, but there isn't yet a uniform industry standard to guarantee that. But I'm not sure he was really truly on top of what he was saying. Could you, for the benefit of our listeners, can you talk a little bit about the performance characteristics of the powders across the industry and their consistency?
Sure. We do find that powders from different suppliers are not all created equally. So depending on the material, depending on the material that we're looking for, the properties that we're looking for, we have different vendors that we use that we feel are more expert or have higher quality for those particular metals, and we might go to a different supplier for others. We typically conduct a detailed process parameter study anytime we work with a new material or a new supplier of the material to be able to really understand the properties of the material and what's possible with, you know, with our process. So, you know, that's one of the challenges, right, because that's a variable that's challenging to control, and that's why we always start with a process parameter study.
So at this point, it sounds like it would be accurate to say the industry still needs to develop a common set of standards that all manufacturers would have to meet for an FAA application or a healthcare application or automotive. That piece of the industry still needs to be put into place, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I believe that's in work in general across AM, whether it be for a process or material, just having standards in place. And that's something that's ongoing, I believe. And that will definitely help. But I think just as with other commodity items, if you buy something from one place or another, it might be a little bit different. And that might be a difficult thing to completely avoid. But we will continue to develop technologies that will allow us to produce, you know, quality parts that have the good part-to-part replication, even without those standards being in place.
Okay. I would think on something like that, you must have to work pretty closely with your customer because they're the ones telling you the performance needs of the part, and that's going to drive the material selection. So everyone probably has to
Absolutely.
Be on the same page that way, I would think.
Absolutely. Yeah, and when we work with some customers that produce their own powders, if you think about NASA, for example, they have their own alloys that they may develop for custom
really?
Applications, and we're able to work with those powders as well. So it doesn't necessarily have to be an off-the-shelf powder that's available to anyone. We can work with custom alloys that are developed for a particular application as well.
That I didn't know that about NASA. That's really cool. Or any other customer. That's really, really interesting. I've heard of, and this is light years away from anything you do, but I've heard of a couple of guys who will buy some petroleum pellets and a little grinder and make their own, you know, PLA or ABS filament for their home jury-rigged FDM printer. But I hadn't heard that NASA was making metal powders. That's pretty cool. Melanie,
I think they
talked about
typically –
You know, go ahead, please.
Oh, I was going to say, typically NASA has a powder supplier that will actually make the powder for them, but they will develop the alloy and have the IP rights for the alloy, and then they'll, you know, outsource the production of the actual powder to a powder manufacturer.
So they develop the standards of it. Okay, that makes sense.
Right.
Melanie, everything we've talked about has been where the industry is now, where the technologies are now, with maybe a little bit of a look back. You're kind of at the heart of this, you and your company. And I want to put you on the spot here a little bit if I can. Jump ahead 5 years, 10 years. What do you think we're going to see in aerospace with additive technologies in terms of either designs or improved performance? Is there some particular home run you see coming down the runway, to use a bad pun?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the items that we're going to see more of is definitely production parts being made with additive manufacturing, particularly with the technology such as LMD or DED, where you can scale for very large parts or for very high throughput. So I think in the next 5 to 10 years, we'll see more of the production parts for critical components. And I think we'll also see a lot in the materials area, like we talked about before, where there's going to be new materials come online that make the additive manufacturing process more predictable, more repeatable, and offer enhanced material properties that, you know, we didn't know about.
There seems to be a kind of changing ratio in terms of how much production you could do with an additive process, and by regardless of which technology it is, metals or resins, what have you. And what I mean by that is, when I was new to this 5.5 years ago, I think the attitude was still that 3D printing is very slow, the material diversity is lacking, there's not a lot of knowledge about how to design to leverage it. So when I was new, it was still considered very much a prototyping technology, and maybe production for some really simple, low-volume applications. Now it's 5.5 years later. I asked you the question about, let's look ahead 5 to 10 years, and the first thing you said was, you'll see it used more and more in production. But there's still the, I mean, 3D printing is still slower than traditional manufacturing processes. But that ratio seems to be changing. I mean, do you think the printers are just going to get faster, or a company might buy more of them? How? I mean, it's not going to make 1,000 a week or something. So, but aerospace doesn't have that volume need. Where does that trade-off take place? And it might not be possible to answer that right now.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, a few things, you know, that contribute to, you know, what you're talking about in terms of speed. You know, the first is side by side, yes, a traditional process might be faster than additive, but sometimes there's the tooling that's involved for that, which can take months.
Yeah.
So, you know, depends what you're comparing. If you are trying to build, you know, thousands and thousands of the same widgets and the design never changes, you might use additive for a different purpose then. You might use it to repair your tooling instead of using additive to make the parts themselves.
Yeah.
And so I think it'll continue to have a big play regardless of if you're building, you know, 50 of something or 50,000 of something, it's still a tool that you can use. But I don't see additive, you know, completely replacing traditional manufacturing,
right,
you know, for some of the reasons that you talked about. It doesn't make sense for every application to use 3D printing or additive manufacturing. Now, we can with LMD and DED, we have sped up the printing process significantly, orders of magnitude faster than what you would typically find with the powder bed type technology. But it's typically a trade-off of resolution versus speed. So that's another element you have to analyze if you're deciding, one, if you should use additive manufacturing, and two, if you will use additive manufacturing, which technology is best for your application.
Right. Which technology, which material. And your point about, is traditional manufacturer going to go away? I give talks on 3D printing. I give them at trade shows. I also give them to local groups here around the Northeast. And I've had people say to me afterward, so you think one day all traditional manufacturing will go away? And I'll say no.
Right.
And the way I explain it is this. I say, if there's no greater design in a particular component or a part to make it more efficient, then I don't know why you'd 3D print it. It's working as good as it's ever been. And I have a really silly comparison, but it seems to help people understand. I'll say you came to me and asked me to 3D print in metal a knife and a fork. I'd say, yeah, I could do it. Why would you bother? You're not going to get a better knife and fork, and your food's not going to taste any better. The knife and fork has reached its design peak. there's no greater design here. So just keep making it the way you've been making it. And I know it's a silly analogy, but it seems to help people understand it a little bit who don't have a background like yours.
Right.
Melanie, something I like to give all of our people who take the time to say here. So again, the title of your talk is Metal Additive Manufacturing for Aerospace Applications. If there's one thing that you'd like the attendees next week to walk out of your talk with, is the one particular item you'd like them thinking, huh, I didn't realize blank, fill in the blank.
Yeah, I think it's just that LMD and DED is a technology that is ready to be integrated into either a prototyping system or for production. It's mature. We have excellent applications that it's been used for. And although it's not as common as powder bed, there are significant benefits of the technology. And I'll talk more about that in my talk next week.
And your talk is going to be Tuesday, February 5th, from 2 to 3 o'clock, room 208B, like boy. Melanie, I'm really looking forward to the talk. And thank you for having taken the time to share some of your insights with us. This is a field that I think in the next 10 years we're going to see some really, really extraordinary things. And I think people like you are at the heart of it, and it's cool stuff you're working on. I guess that's the best way I can say it.
Yeah, it is. It's exciting every day what we can do. So thanks so much for having me, Jack.
My pleasure, Melanie. Thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to seeing you next week.